It's by the way, make sure this doesn't go into the recording for fuck's sake.
Oh no, this is going to be the intro. Welcome to another edition of Films on Trial. I'm Gav.
I'm Alex.
And I'm Dave.
And this week we continue our best of 2023 season as we look at some of the biggest films of 2023 and we put them on trial. And this week we're looking at perhaps one of the most metaphorical and literal explosive action films of the year. That's right, we'll be putting John Wick Chapter 4 on trial. Is it, this is a bit of a stretch, this one, but is it like a candle in the wind or is it burning the candle at both ends?
I like it. That's,
oh, yeah, that's yes. A good one.
Less of a stretch than many you do. No, I like it.
Thank you very much. Essentially, we're going to find out if it will be placed on our esteemed hit list or our steaming shit list. But before we find out, let's talk about our last trial, which was the very divisive 2023 drama thriller Saltburn. Aussie, famed bathtub beverage enthusiasts, judged that trial and deemed that it should be placed on the hit list. He's since gone away and he's watched the film. Did he make the right call, yes or no? Well, unfortunately, he's not here on time, so we don't know. So oh, I'm just going to ask you guys.
He'll love it. He'll absolutely love it, to be fair.
Yeah, I mean, that would be right up his street. But with regards to the verdict, do you think that he made the right call? Should it be on the hit list? It is quite a divisive film. You know, it could have gone either way. Do you think he made the right call?
Yeah,
no,
I think he made the right call.
I still don't.
I think he did. I think it's a good film. I think it's different. I think it's novel. It's not perfect, and it's probably getting a bit of traction on social media through shock value, like you said. You're quite right to say so. But I still think it's good. I think there's some good performances in there as well.
Thanks, Dave. Alex?
I wanted to see the rest of the film that it set up at the beginning and meandered off into some sort of nonsense. I have to say, though, the soundtrack that I have been listening to a lot of Sophie Ellis-Bextor, Perfect, Exceed It, and all those songs off the soundtrack, and remembering good memories from university. So yeah, the soundtrack at least has stayed with me massively. But yeah, the film itself, great, just not the second half.
Yeah, it wasn't too dissimilar to your uni experience, actually, was it, Alex?
To be fair, yeah, you did go to one of those towns, didn't you? And you did worm your way into a few upper class social gatherings.
We all remember the killing spree.
And there was quite a lot of naked dancing as well, if I remember correctly.
And I don't remember anything, but it doesn't mean it didn't happen. Suppose,
so. If anybody in our friendship group is somebody who would have made love to a grave, then I think...
Don't finish the sentence.
I mean, the first thing that came into my head is, whose grave is it?
it's a nice way you said made love to a grave as well. That's such a polite way of saying it.
Well, because I was envisaging my own grave. I'm 100% confident that if I were to go, that would be you. Pants down.
Oh yeah, pants down, hands down, pants down.
Rusting away yeah. With tears coming out your eyes.
We have digressed.
A little.
Anyway, a good snapshot there of the general perception, I think, of Saltburn. We've got one positive review and one negative review as well. So, yeah, thank you very much for that, guys.
A good insight into our friendship group as well, perhaps. But yeah.
Too much of it. I'm in the friendship group and I know too much now. I don't want to know about this.
So, and just like that, we've actually been joined by Ozzy, who could give us his genuine opinion about Saltburn. You put it on the hit list. Did you make the right decision? Yes or no?
Yes.
Thank you very much. We'll move on.
I thought it was really good. I think actually I can see some of the negative arguments for sure. Like there is a lot of style potentially over substance, but also I thought there were a lot of choices throughout it. There were a lot of signposts to things which made me think that there was a bit more of a narrative that some of the prosecution points were maybe shut down, that if you really paid attention, that there were a few Some of it was glaringly obvious. It was like almost paint by numbers, but I thought it was good. It was really stylish. It was nicely put together, and I think it deserves the plaudits it's been getting. So yeah, on the right list.
Okay, thanks, Ozzy. I mean, you could have said that without shitting over my arguments, but don't know.
No,
okay.
I'm glad he did.
Now on to the trial itself. All of the roles have been picked out of the hat at random, and all of today's insults are, once again, little stretch, descriptions of the best candles that you can buy in the UK as taken from the Daily Telegraph. So, acting as defense and trying to get this film placed on the hit list is Alex, and he's just like the Byredo Bibliotech scented candle. Rich, sophisticated, and unexpectedly comforting. And he smells exactly like leather-bound books in a cozy library.
Oh, Gav, thanks, man.
You needed that after the day you've had.
I did.
And joining Alex will be Ozzy, and he's just like the holistic London Moroccan orange and mimosa-scented candle. Natural, vegan, and very supportive of female farmers. And acting as prosecution and trying to get this film placed on the shit list is me. And I'm just like the neon Christmas wish scented candle. I'll make you feel certain emotions, and I smell just like a Christmas pudding. Now, just like real court advocates, the defense and prosecution will be making the best case for their roles. These may or may not be their real opinions, though, so do stay tuned until the end of the episode to hear what they really think. And in the role of judge, who has to decide which list this film should be placed on, hit or shit, based solely on the arguments put to him, is Dave. And Dave is just like the Liberty Hero scented candle. He evokes a smoky drawing room filled with elegant guests, perfect for the kind of party that Oscar Wilde might have had.
I see that.
They've called them wild parties before, and I always do scribble that E on the end just to make sure.
Okay, so before we get started, I think that we should probably give the audience a bit of a better understanding as to what this film is all about. So let us spin the Wheel of Impressions. So here what we do is we read off the synopsis of the film in the style of one of the cast or characters from the film. This week, it has landed on Dave. So how would we like Dave to read the synopsis?
I mean, how's your Keanu?
Not good. I just want to point out, I haven't actually seen the film either, so be careful who you pick for this impression.
Well, Keanu, you know... maybe not. Hiroyuki Sanada, no. Let's.
Hang on. What about Ian McShane?
Ian McShane.
Yeah.
That's great, Dave. Well done. That's a good one. Holy shit, Dave.
Well, you filled me with confidence there, man.
Ian McShane.
I mean, you've got some great voices, haven't you? Ian McShane, Lance Reddick, Lawrence Fishburne, Keanu Reeves, you know.
I mean, I think Keanu's the easiest one of that. Just do like a husky surfer dude.
Okay, I can try that. I can try Keanu. It's not good, but that'll surely make this a more entertaining section.
Yeah, like a bit gravelly.
John Wick uncovers a path to defeating the High Table. But before he can earn his freedom, Wick must face off against a new enemy with powerful alliances across the globe and forces to turn old friends into foes.
Dave, I say it again, you need to do some audiobooks and send them to me, man. You've got a lovely reading voice.
I've actually started listening to audiobooks, and doesn't Tandy Way Newton have the monopoly on audiobooks right now? Can't get away from it.
I mean, if not audiobooks, then at least some ASMR.
You break into that.
I'll take that one. We can divide and conquer.
Okay, so thank you very much for that impression, Dave. Really well done once again. So as the judge, would you like to please kick off proceedings? Thank you very much.
Yeah, sure. So like I say, I actually haven't seen John Wick 4. I've seen the other three, so I've got an idea what was going on in the franchise. So you don't need to update me on that too much. But yeah, John Wick 4, I haven't seen it. from what I gather from what you've told me, Keanu Reeves is back in it. What a surprise. Ian McShane, Lance Reddick all return into the cast. I hear Hiroyuki Sanada. I hear Donnie Yen. These are good additions to a cast, you know, so this sounds promising to me. I've enjoyed the other three in the trilogy, so I'd hope I'd enjoy four. So I'm going to go over to the defense and tell me why you think I would enjoy John Wick 4.
I mean, you're going to enjoy it because it's the same as the other films in the franchise, but it's still pushing it on. It's still making it different enough that you're going to enjoy it, keeping it the same enough that it's not going to sort of ruin what you want in a John Wick film. I just could quickly sort of, I'm not going to go too much into plot because, you know, it's not really a massive focus of the film. It picks up where the past events, where the third film sort of ended. Basically, John Wick and this sort of the table, which is this big, massive organized crime syndicate that's global, are not on the best of terms. And, you know, John Wick's trying to get back into basically being free again. He wants to be free from the high table. So he's, you know, starting to travel around, trying to see friends, trying to find a way through this, whereas, you know, he can finally get out. The table then imbue all their powers into this Marquis, who's played by Bill Skarsgård, who's given all the power that he can be to kill John Wick. And essentially the Marquis begins to cut a swathe of just carnage through all of John Wick's old friends, through or sort of all the rules of this world that's been built up over the last three films, to try and find him. You know, John Wick goes to Osaka, into the sort of the Continental, the hotel, but in Osaka, that's destroyed, you know, from the Marquis's men trying to find him. New York's exploded. Cairon is shot, the concierge, you know, the Lance Reddick's character. And Ian McShane, he's lost his hotel, it's blown up. So John Wick, after quite a few action sequences, starts to see that the only way that he can get free is to use the ancient rules of the table against it. So he challenges Bill Skarsgård to a duel. And he has to, you know, sets it up, essentially has to rejoin his house, rejoin a family. And then finally, so they sort of meet finally as equals. They have this great showdown right at the end. It's just a fantastic film. Like, just to go into the main thing, you know, about, you know, because the plot's one part of it. But the main thing is just the action in this. This is a long film. It is, you know, it's not a short film. It's about over two and a half hours. It's like nearly 2¾ hours. It's a very, very long film. And to be honest, when I put it on Sunday, I was thinking, like, I'm not getting through this. I don't want to spend 3 hours of my afternoon watching this. However, I just didn't stop watching it, because you'd think after 2 hours, and especially three films, the action would have got boring at this point. And it did remind me, there's a certain point, I think, in either the second or the third film, when it's like the 19th time that Keanu Reeves has sort of, you know, wrapped his legs around someone and then blown their brains out between his, you know, it. But this, the fights are just constantly evolving and changing. You know, yeah, the big first fight is in Osaka. You have them, you know, they're wearing these armor clothes that were introduced, which, you know, is a little bit silly, but it also makes the action much more fun when you realize the gunfire doesn't need to be behind cover. They can have this close quarters combat. But that's brought in as well. Some of them have guns and some of them have samurai swords and are firing arrows. You know, there's this great fight when people are being pinned to the walls with arrows. There's, it's hard not to bring in the other cast as well. You got Donnie Yen in this film as well. You know, the Hong Kong action superstar who comes in. And he's a blind character in it. So the fight sequences that he's in, you know, so you're only talking about this Osaka fight sequence, but you've got the arrows, you've got samurai swords, you've got the different levels that are being fought on. Then Donnie Yen comes in, who's fighting blind. Then he fights. They've got swords. They've got samurai swords. Every single moment of the film, you'll have like an action sequence that's maybe 2-3 minutes long, and then it changes up. So you're moving, it's constantly evolving. So even in these long action sequences, it's just constantly, you know, you're giving nunchucks come into it. It's just really, really interesting. And that just goes on through the whole film. You have the, you know, we have horseback shooting in this film. We have, a fight scene in Berlin in this big club, where people are jumping off walls. It's just fantastic. And then it sets itself up for this really, really just hugely long, it's almost about an hour action scene in Paris, essentially, that, like I say, follows that same pattern where you've got like almost car kung fu, where John Wick is riding around the Arc de Triomphe firing weapons. He's drifting around cars as he's shooting people. You've then it moves into him like throwing, basically using the car as a sort of like a weapon at the same time. Then he's fighting all the way up these stairs and down these stairs. Then there's another incredible, sorry, before that, there's an incredible sequence that's basically a bird's eye plan of him going through the different rooms and shooting and firing people. It's just a fantastically inventive film. You can't believe how inventive this is as an action film. It doesn't just have that one, you know, in the first film, it was kind of, it got a little bit known because it was the violence and the fact that he kept shooting people in the head. This just goes absolutely all out. Just the amount of invention, innovation in this. And I think that's down to the fact that, you know, you got Chad Stahelski, who is a stuntman himself. This is a film made by stuntmen for stuntmen. You know, he knows action in and out, and that is absolutely what you get. So you want an amazing end to this franchise. It's John Wick Chapter 4. It just couldn't get bigger or better.
Okay, thank you very much. And out of interest, is this the end of the franchise?
So at the end of the film, big spoilers, John Wick is killed. Okay. But, you know,
always spin-off,
it's also shit.
But there's always spin-off.
It's shitting money as a franchise. And also, why would they kill? But, yeah, there's already two spin-offs, right. I think, from this film.
Ballerina by Justin Lin. It's an Amazon series called The Continental, based on...
Okay, so this is the end of John Wick, but not the end of this universe that they've created, essentially.
Yeah.
Potentially
the end of John Wick.
Yeah,
okay.
We don't see him actually get buried. We don't see anybody desecrating his grave.
Yeah. More's the pity. I mean, you know. Now, if Emerald Fennell had been directing it, we could have seen some grave desecrating. Okay. We'd at least know he was dead by then, yeah.
There is a deleted scene where Ian McShane says to the Barry King, just give me 5 minutes. And then he just unzips his fly.
Okay, thank you very much. I'm going to stay with you, actually, then, Gav. Prosecution points, but this sounds good from what I'm gathering. You know, I quite like the trilogy, so Alex tells me that it delivers a lot of what the fans and what I would want from this series, while at the same time pushing it forward in new directions. It's well shot by the sounds of it. It seems like it's well directed, inventive action made by stuntmen for stuntmen. I'm not a stuntman, but I think I'll still enjoy it. You know, it all sounds promising and sounds entertaining, even though it is a little longer than I expect most action films to be. It keeps you engrossed. This sounds very positive.
Yeah, I would dispute a number of the things that Alex said, to be honest. I would say, yeah, that's right, Alex. You
do it.
Push those glasses back up. I would say that there are like hints of inventiveness, but generally it's same old, same old. Now, don't get me wrong, I absolutely loved John Wick's 1-3. So when the fourth installment was announced, I was obviously eager, but I did wonder, where could you possibly go with this story and, you know, and the action as well to keep it fresh? And it felt like they covered a lot of ground in the first three films. And there was a little bit of a risk for me that the fourth could become a little bit repetitive or even irrelevant. And I'm not going to lie and say that this is the worst film ever made, because I know for a fact we've all watched Bullet Crow. But I believe...
Again and again.
I know, again and again and again. But it's my fault. I'll take the blame. But I believe that my initial apprehension was right. And unfortunately, it did feel a little rinse and repeat of the previous installments. Some of the characters didn't really feel very well developed. They didn't really progress from previous films. And two, I'd say, on some of the new characters as well, for example, Bill Skarsgård's villain, the Marquis, who doesn't really feel like a credible or menacing villain as previous ones, and whose motivations aren't really massively defined. And then you have Shamir Anderson's Mr. Nobody, who I imagine is going to start in some sort of spin-off, but what I think was supposed to come across as like quiet and mysterious about his character actually came across as quite dull and lacking personality. You just had two new characters there who appear quite a lot in the film, not really adding anything to it. I genuinely didn't care about Mr. Nobody in this film. Why would I want to see him in several spin-offs? The story is pretty weak itself, which I know isn't saying a great deal. No one goes to see a John Wick film because of the story. They go to see Keanu Reeves absolutely batter the living piss out of nameless henchmen for a couple of hours. But the action at times, as Alex said, it can be inventive, and there are like some really nice camera. There is some really nice camera work. There's some really nicely constructed action set pieces as well, but it is quite a lot of the same over and over and over again. John Wick just murdering unnamed henchmen over and over and over again, and like it's okay initially, but I did find after a while my mind was drifting. And just under 3 hours, I think it's 2:49, it did drift a lot. The action, which is what people want to see from this film, was well choreographed, well delivered, as I said before, but it wasn't anything that we haven't seen before multiple times in this franchise. And multiple action set pieces went on far too long. Alex talks about that. That's sort of like essentially 1 hour set piece towards the end. It goes from like different stages. There's a bit in it where it's about 20 minutes or so of John Wick struggling to ascend a steep and long set of stairs whilst battling baddies throughout it. It takes an absolute age to get to the top. A lot of the sort of fighting is a bit repetitive. And when he finally gets to the top, he gets kicked straight down to the bottom again, and the scene essentially resets. So not only does it feel like we've seen something in previous John Wick films, we've seen something in this John Wick film very similar to it as well. Alex,
I'm just going to let him butt in here.
So that's a good example to say exactly what I was saying. I mean, like that sequence is fantastic. It's almost like sort of a Buster Keaton section. You know, you get fights all the way up. It's really difficult to get to the top. And that's what's nice is the humor in this film. You know, they know what they're doing. And, you know, he gets all the way to the top all the time, sort of, you know, fighting in this different way. We've never seen him sort of ascend up this massive staircase. And then at the end, he gets to the top and he's kicked down. And really, when you see him looking up at that massive staircase, you're kind of thinking, oh, you know, what would happen if you... So he's going to always be knocked down. When he's knocked to the bottom, he's only got 3 minutes to get to the top before, you know, the duel is forfeit. Donnie Yen comes along and they both fight up together then, all the way up. So Donnie Yen... That's exactly what I mean. It's never... You're never watching the same thing. Donnie Yen comes along and they fight together as a duo, which we haven't seen up until that point. So, you know, yes, it's overblown. Yes, it's a lot, but it is always, always different. So I would say exactly what Gav said there. Yeah, there's an element of, yeah, they're going back up the stairs, but it's not like it takes as long going back up. And this time you're seeing these two gigantic action stars, which, you know, we're really, as soon as you know that Donnie Yen's in the film, you're like, oh, they're going to fight against each other. But then you kind of know, don't they? They're going to work together at some point. And that's what you're seeing on the fight in Montmartre, running up the stairs to the Sacré-Cœur. Just, you know what I mean? That whole sentence is fantastic. And that's what you want, you know?
A lot of these action films, you'll have stars like Keanu Reeves who will be very heavily involved and will want to do a lot of his own choreography. So beforehand, they'll go through like stunt choreography where they have a number of like set routines, essentially. So it'll be like, and when you're practicing it with your stunt workers, it'll be like a case of like, yeah, do A, and you know, set A comprises of like four moves, and you'll be like, do set B, and that comprises of a couple of the moves from set A, but with a couple more thrown in. And they'll have about like four or five of these sets. So if you watch it for long enough, you can see the same moves or the same routines being repeated time and time again. I remember we spoke about the exact same thing in John Wick Chapter 2. Like, and don't get me wrong, I'm not like bemoaning Keanu Reeves because he's doing a lot of work himself, but he isn't as gifted or technically experienced as Donnie Yen. Whereas you could watch Donnie Yen and he could do something new every single time. With Keanu Reeves, it does feel a little bit repetitive. And a lot of this does culminate, unfortunately, in him just shooting nameless henchmen over and over again in the head. And it just feels like the same thing. Oh, it might be shot in a different way, or it might feature a different actor, like Donnie Yen might come in for a little bit. But it is, a lot of the fighting feels the exact same.
How dare you take Keanu Reeves' name?
I've done it. I'm going to do it again.
How dare you? How dare you? He's such a nice man. I can't believe you said that.
I do want to ask a couple of questions about plot here, and I want the defense to kind of weigh in, because Gav acknowledged that, okay, you might not turn up for the story. You might not turn up to a John Wick film for the story here. And he says it is kind of weak. He made a concession that, you know, maybe it gets away with being weak, but I want to hear what the defense have to say.
I don't think it's weak. I think it's pretty clear what's going on. And you know, Gav was talking a bit about, you know, characters' motivations. I think that's pretty clear as well. John Wick wants to be free, and the table, this big mythical thing, is sort of all encompassed in, you know, this sort of, you know, because you can't have 12 different members going after him. Bill Skarsgård takes that mantle as the table itself, basically, finally coming against John Wick. So the story is absolutely great for what you need it to be. It's John Wick finally fighting against the thing that's been in the background this whole time. And, you know, there's no plot holes because, yes, it's a simple story, but simple can be very effective. And I think a convoluted plot in a film that's not going at all for like a thriller or some sort of twist or anything like that, none of that's going on in this film. You don't want it muddying up the works. You want a very simple motivations for these characters. And that's exactly what you get. So I don't think the plot is a problem at all. I mean, you know, again, it's not an asset, but you wouldn't really expect it to be. Can I come back on some of the things Gav was saying about the characters as well? I think the characters.
Yeah, can I come back to you on that in 1 second? Just going to get Ozzy.
My comment actually leads into characters, really, is that
happy days.
While the plot isn't, you know, massively convoluted or isn't, you know, incredibly complicated, what I think you have is some really nice sections of setting up the characters again. So they come in with you know, very immediate sort of responses to John Wick. You know, when they're first introduced, it's like automatically, you know, he's like my oldest friend. I will get rid of the hotel. Everything I do is for him. I owe him so much. And I think that you don't need to do any of the backstory there because they're setting it up for the future, but it leads into, I already know their motivation. I'm already on their side, and I want to know more about them.
That's a little bit lazy, though.
You know,
instead of like showing us, they're just telling us. Hiroyuki Sanada comes in, and it's like, oh yeah, we're dead old mates. We're great, you know. Rather than kind of showing that connection,
He doesn't.
He says, all right, John, the old mucker.
to be clear, Dave, none of that's verbatim dialogue. That just to be clear. All right, John. All right, Hiroyuki. How are things? Not too bad. Oh, my God. The hotel's being taken over. No, that just isn't how the scene goes whatsoever. The scene's really good, just to say that exact point. I won't talk for long. You know, there's kind of a thing where John Wick's walking around going to friends, and you're thinking, well, he's endangering these friends, surely. You know, should he be doing it? You know, the daughter of is concerned, played by Rina Sawayama, really, really well. And, you know, there's this bit where John Wick and I've forgotten Hiroyuki Sanada's character name, but he's not in it for too long. And they're talking about it. And, you know, in Japanese, John Wick says, you know, I'm sorry for bringing this. And it's a nice line when you know, he's responds to friendships means little when it's convenient. You know, it's a nicely tied in scene, that, you know, because you've got this thing of, you know, John Wick's putting his friends in danger, and he says that line, which is it's a very good line. And that just brings that to a close. You know what I mean? So within the film, there are these really nice, quick character moments. That they're not developing massive character arcs. That's not what they're trying to do. But it's these little character moments, and they're really well done. You know, again, Hiroyuki Sanada, I feel like he has some of the best lines. He's being told, you know, you're a fool for letting John in. And he says, fools talk, cowards are silent, but a wise man listens. It's good dialogue, that. You know, the film's not popping full of great lines and great, but it's got some really, really good little moments in there that just mean, yeah, you can crack on with it.
Okay, and so that's you a bit on characters as well, is it? Because I cut you off before on characters.
Yeah, just I think my main thing on characters are just, you know, talk about actors later. But my main thing on characters are, you're not expecting this long, you're not expecting a Bill Skarsgård to be mucking up by coming to some great epiphany or noticing this or doing this or doing this. They all have these nice little moments where you learn a little bit about their characters, but not too much because, you know, we're off and we're on a horseback firing a gun. We're doing burnouts on the Arc de Triomphe while shooting about 16 guys, you know. But just to say that there's no character development, absolutely not. There's more lovely moments with characters that then we crack on with after.
Okay, thank you very much. So, Gav, bit to come back on there. These characters sound okay, like better than you'd honestly expect a no-brainer action film to be. Basically, that seems to be the general gist of things here. You know, while John Wick embraces the fact it is a no-brainer actioner, you don't have to think too hard, it's better than the average one by a long way. You know, the action is better, the characters are better, the script is better. What do you have to say to this?
I disagree. I don't think the script is better, to be honest. I think the writers wrote themselves into a bit of a corner with the previous films. And then you have this little bit of a drawn-out opening. Alex said that the first big sort of action scene is in Osaka, which is, say, about like 20 minutes or so into the film. So you have this sort of drawn-out opening bit, which culminates in John killing the Elder, who is essentially the person who sits above the high table. So he thinks, if I kill him, that's it, game over. And that should really be the story, surely not. And then we're introduced to this new high table member played by Bill Skarsgård with a French accent that Pepe Le Pew would be embarrassed of, to be honest. He's been given unlimited resources by the rest of the high table to kill John, even though John has effectively chopped off the head of the serpent. It just becomes one of these things. Like, it's like, well, hang on, how many high table people are left? You know, like, where the thing is it raises a lot of questions, but it doesn't really answer them. Then it's back to familiar territory. John Wick on the run, John traveling and hiding in another international continental, being found out there, and then a big battle ensuing. Then we get this bit of a MacGuffin bullshit about this old tradition in which John has to win this old-fashioned duel so he can ask for anything he wants, but he needs to be part of a family to do so. So he travels to Russia, where Keanu Reeves murders the Russian language worse than any henchman that John Wick has killed. It's all just a bit uninspiring, really. We've seen it done much better in other John Wick films and John Wick-like films such as Nobody. The first John Wick was really refreshing and had such an interesting mythology behind it. The idea of this secret society of assassins that follow specific codes. And then as the films went on, this interesting and mysterious concept started getting milked more and more. That by the time this film rolled out, it was completely spent. And now there's going to be spin-off series. You know, they've already got an actual TV series, which is a spin-off of The Continental. They've got several films planned. It's going down the Star Wars route of leaving no stone unturned, and by doing so, making the overall saga much less interesting as a whole. So there's nothing really new that John Wick 4 could bring to the table, or should that be the high table? But as I said previously, people don't watch John Wick films for the story. They watch it for the action, which unfortunately is another area that I think the film falls down on. Just to counter some of what Alex was saying before, the first couple of John Wick films felt fresh, interesting. Although story-wise, it was a bit of a generic tale of revenge. What it did have going for it was these incredible action sequences. You had, as Alex said before, Chad Stahelski, who may have been inexperienced in directing, made up for it in his experience of stunt work and stunt choreography. You had in Keanu Reeves, somebody who admittedly isn't the greatest actor, sacrilege, I'm sorry, Alex, but who is incredibly likable and whose work ethic is through the roof. So he would, when he's filming a film, he is 100% in. And the result of all that was that you had this film that was incredibly well choreographed, acted and shot action sequences and fight sequences, essentially. But as the series went on and Stahelski's directing abilities grew, you had the sort of core action backbone. But in addition to that, you had really great cinematography, a more polished script, and much more interesting and ambitious sets and sequences on a bigger budget. However, with this fourth installment, I think the idea as well was running a bit dry. A lot of the action, as I mentioned before, is just a bit repetitive, and it's there is an unlimited amount of carbon copy bad guys for John Wick to dispose of. And after about 10 minutes or so, it feels like the same scene over and over again. I mean, you know, the setting might be different and there might be new elements, like Alex said, or here's some bow and arrows and here's some samurai swords. But a lot of the bulk of that scene is just the same thing over and over and over again. But it's not just the monotony of the action. It's also the length of the scenes as well. Far too many of them go on for far too long, to the point that it's actually a little bit boring to watch, especially when by four films in, John Wick has become the sort of equivalent, the dinner jacket wearing equivalent of Superman. He can suffer incredible amounts of damage. He can be shot at point blank range. He can fall from tremendous height, but he just gets up and shrugs it off. So there's no real peril for the main character, which means that these action sequences, you're really only thinking, I wonder how henchman number 432 is going to die. And the answer, of course, is always a bullet to the head.
I mean, it's effective. You can't fault the man for effectiveness, sure. Ozzy, I want to come to you and get your opinion on any of that that you want to take Gav down on. It's this script there. We got action. We got characters as well. Though Alex has covered a lot of that, but
I think actually, famously for the script, I think he may only have about 26 lines of dialogue. I can't remember the exact name, but I remember when it first came out, there was a lot of incredulity about just how much he was being paid for how little he was speaking.
Like Keanu Reeves, 26 lines of dialogue.
Something low like that, yeah. He's not in there to talk, and John Wick is famously a man of very little words. That's one of the things which is really, really great about the first one, that he barely speaks, and yet you completely understand his motivation. For me, like 2 and 3, that's what that was missing, is that they were fantastic, better in terms of action and everything else, but it was no longer about, you know, the dog and what that meant to him in terms of his dead wife. You know, that was... The first one was very clear, I think, as a motivation. This one, I think the motivation's clear again. And he doesn't need to speak. So all of the action, it's, I mean, like Alex was saying earlier, some of the scenes are just fantastic. You know, they're so out of this world. And I read a fact about this, that there was an opportunity to film a John Wick 4 and a John Wick 5 together. And they decided to just do the one film and focus on having one incredible like film. We've got the budget, let's just make one film where it's all absolutely batshit crazy in terms of the action that you've never seen before. And I think that's exactly what we've got here. This is pushing, you know, pushing the boundaries of martial arts scenes in all sorts of ways, certainly in like a Western world. You know, we think we've mentioned it on here, and when we first talked about John Wick, and I've heard it bandied about loads of times, this sort of gun fu sort of thing, you know, it's there's loads of that. I think I don't know whether it used it, but I've certainly seen it used on the Arc de Triomphe scene has been described as like car fu. You know, it's just what it really is. There's a whole host of dance choreography, and it's dressed up as martial arts and fight scenes. There's actually a scene in this where they're in a club, and everyone else, and it looks like dancing. They're having an outrageous battle in the middle of the club. And when it pans away, it's almost indiscernible from the dancing that's around, and people are still dancing. You know, the reality of that is obviously absurd, that people wouldn't know you were fighting, but it looks fantastic. There's other, you know, there's just all sorts of really clever.
Ozzy, I hope there's so many like massive diehard John Wick fans that might be listening to this and just staring into space going like, oh my God. Oh my God, but I love dance.
Do you know, I think it is, it's like a ballet. It's a violent ballet. And it's really, it's fantastic throughout. I think it's incredibly well put together. The action scenes, yes, there's a lot of them. It's a long film for an action film, but it doesn't feel long. It's, you know, all of these different pieces, a lot of traveling around the globe, and it doesn't really matter like how you get there. Who cares? We're in the next place. We've got all of the weapons we need, and we've got another scene to work through. And honestly, it's all the better for that, the way it's working. The rest of the Paris scene, you know, we talked about the steps. I think that's absolutely incredible, and you know, genuinely funny moments within that, you know, constantly getting knocked down. It's just ace. Like, I think in terms of action, it's as good as the first one in terms of the novelty of it and the way it came out. You know, the first one, I think, really did raise the bar in terms of what we can expect to see from an action film. And this one, I think, went even further again.
Okay. Well, thank you very much.
Can I just comment there? Like, my main issue isn't how John Wick gets to these places, but I don't have a problem with John Wick's modes of transportation.
Oh, it was one of my biggest bugbears. If I had to give it a negative, it was how did they get into these places? Where is he getting his guns immediately in all these new cities? But you know, you don't need to. It doesn't really matter, because that's the, you know, that's the whole point of it, isn't it? He's a badass assassin.
Wouldn't it be great seeing him get like a Starbucks in Heathrow?
Waiting in the airport.
Waiting at terminal
he's got a 2-hour wait for security to get
his
through.
His AirPods have just run out of battery and he's like, fuck.
I mean, I actually would quite like to see that. Keanu Reeves fighting his way through an airport. Maybe that can be the maybe that can be the next one. But yeah, that sounds good. Thank you very much, guys. Has anyone got anything to add? Any closing points you feel that I need to know about?
Just if I could come back on the characters, if that's okay. But apologies once again, Alex, but I'm going to talk about Keanu Reeves. You know, who doesn't love Keanu Reeves? He could churn out a million awful performances and people would still love him and still pay to see his films because he's such a likable and engaging person. Freaking not a great actor though. Not a great actor, which was fine in the first John Wick where the character was quiet and mysterious. But as the franchise has gone on and more has been revealed of the character, more emotions have been evoked, the more Reeves, I think, has struggled and the less engaging the character has felt. And even though he has little to say in this film, I think it's most evident because of where like Wick finally meets his candlestick maker. I think that in the hands of a more experienced actor, the final scenes of this film would have been so powerful and emotional.
He's quite experienced. He's quite an experienced actor.
I'm not saying that, you know, like this is only his second film. What I mean is maybe not experienced, maybe a better actor. But instead, you know, they just feel a little bit lifeless. You know, it's not as compelling or as powerful as it could have been, basically. I mentioned previously as well that John Wick as a character is pretty much indestructible. And even though he ultimately dies at the end of this film, he still spends 2.5 hours receiving an unbelievable amount of punishment without showing much impact. It just makes the character unrelatable and hard to root for. If you know that no matter what happens to him, he's always going to win, why should we invest so much into the character, especially 4 films deep? Also, I mentioned in my opening remarks that there are some characters that feel a little underdeveloped. You know, the Marquis feels like a caricature of a Bond villain, but like a Rami Malek one, not a Christopher Walken one. He feels...
don't pitch yourself to the judge. That's just... don't demean yourself.
Christopher Walken wasn't the great Bond villain, to be honest with you. Max Zorin was quite lacking.
But I didn't want to insult anybody else. But he feels a little underwhelming in comparison to previous villains. And like, I will buy anybody here a Freddo if they could name me his head henchman. You know, what was his head henchman called? The guy may as well have been played by a coat stand. Like, there's no character at all, really. No, Alex is struggling. Don't look it up.
No, I know his name. I know the actor's name. I don't know his character's name.
So then there's the anti-hero, Mr. Nobody, who didn't really engage or inspire me. I think any other characters who were introduced in previous installments or even in this film who were much more intriguing and engaging, there was far too much time spent on this particular character and I wasn't asked about him in the slightest. And although, yeah, I will admit that there are good performances from new cast members like Donnie Yen and Hiroyuki Sanada, and also from old cast members like Lawrence Fishburne, Ian McShane, Lance Reddick, it's the character work that lets them down. Arguably, only Yen and Sanada have any real character growth or motivation or purpose. And like, I just think that how is Winston or the Bowery King different now from when we were first introduced to them in the first and second films, respectively? What really changes for them? How did they grow as a character? All I'm saying is that they could have been played by anybody or they could have not been in the film and it wouldn't have impacted the film in the slightest bit. And at the end of the day, you could argue that this is called John Wick, so he should be the main focus. But when you've established so many good supporting characters in previous films, to then not develop them or give them much to work with, it feels like a bit disappointing, to be honest.
Okay.
Thank you, Gavin. Yeah.
So I would disagree with Gav's last point there when he said, you know, these characters that have been well established before. I don't think they really were. I think the character of Winston was just Ian McShane doing a very good job as Ian McShane. You know, that's what's interesting about watching it. It's just him in the first film being Ian McShane and having that kind of like nice suaveness about him. And he continues to do that. What you need, you know, I would say this is where an ensemble cast is quite important. is in a film like this, when, you know, it's a mainly action film, the characters do take, the actual character arc and development isn't going to happen, but you've got these big actors jumping in. And that just means that you're not really having to, you're not worrying about the development because it's Ian McShane, you know, it's Lawrence Fishburne. You know, you're not watching it thinking, the Bowery King, what's his motivation? How did he change? It's Lawrence Fishburne. Look at him, and he's having fun, and he's, you know, shouting out lines. He's having a great time. Let's talk about, you know, Clancy Brown is dotted around in this film as the harbinger. He's this kind of like a legal person who comes around from the table, who enforces the rules to the letter of the law. And he's just got this, you know, his gravitas is just, you know, oozing off him. And he's just, in every scene he's in, he's just, it's like, great, Clancy Brown's in it. I don't need to know his motivation. I don't want to know his character. I don't need to know any of that. I just think that's great. That's really fun that Clancy Brown is in that. That makes this film more fun. Bill Skarsgård is a French aristocrat. I just think he loved it. You know what I mean? He spends most of the time looking like he should have like a little feathered tricorn hat. You know, he looks like the exact people that they were guillotining in Paris, you know, like, you know, a few hundred years before. It's just a bit of fun. It's a bit of pantomime to it. He also, as Bill Skarsgård does himself, adds a good level of malice and kind of this kind of childish arrogance to it. I thought Shamir Anderson was pretty good as Mr. Nobody. Again, it's not about his character. It's about the way he fights. He's got this tracker dog with him and his Winchester rifle. That's what's interesting about him, because of the way he then, you know, goes into the scene and the way he talks. The henchman, Marco Zaror, who plays, I think he's great. He's got this really good accent. He's got a nice fighting style. And again, you got Rina Sawayama, who's the daughter of Hiroyuki Sanada. You got Donnie Yen. You know, I can't believe at the end of that list, I'm saying, oh yeah, and Donnie Yen's in this film as well. You know, it's a fantastic cast, and that's what you need for a film that's not wanting to go, not wanting to get muddied down in its characters. You need these big stars, so you know who they are already. They're already established in your mind because these are established actors already. It's like if Al Pacino goes into a film, you kind of already know Al Pacino. Do you know what I mean? He's a known quantity, so you're not having to like work hard to like work out who the character is or anything like that. Everything, all the pieces are in play. It's just like, great, that's Clancy Brown. I know him. What's he doing here? He's doing a great job. And just a last couple of points, just because I really need to put this in. As well as all of that, it's got a fantastic soundtrack to it. You know, the soundtrack that's going with these scenes that, you know, works with the actual move, sometimes the bullet effects. It's very, very well done. It's not just they've put a song on. It's really well choreographed to the music. The sound effects of the bullets and all of that is really fantastic. It's got a nice humor running through it, dark humor, you know, where John Wick reloads a gun, takes him a little while, and then he shoots the guy in the head yet again. So it's got a lovely humor going through it. And my last point is the locations in this are fantastic. Like Ozzy was saying, this film spans the globe. It goes from place to place to place. You're in this nightclub in Berlin, but it's so beautiful, just the architecture within it. The Osaka Hotel, again, are very different. You've got these kind of Japanese gardens set with this like sort of more austere Japanese modern architecture. And then the whole part in Paris, just beautifully shot. Obviously, some of it is green screen, because I'm guessing they didn't ride around the Arc de Triomphe at night in, you know, but I couldn't tell. I think that's a real testament to the way that this film has got real action, but it is just, it's so mind-blowingly big this time, since it's the fourth film, but yeah, it blows you away.
Okay, thank you very much.
It blows, all right.
Yeah. I was quite proud of my little flourish.
Thank you very much. I'm happy to call it there. I think I've heard everything I need to hear, unless anyone's got anything they need to add.
I could boil this film down into a three-word summary.
Do it. Go ahead. But you can't use the word shit.
No. Beats, shoots, and Reeves.
I mean, I like that, but that doesn't sound like a bad thing, Gav. That's just...
Well, that over and over and over and over again for 3 hours.
Oh, okay. Yeah, no, that would get repetitive. No, we're good. I'm going to call it a trial there.
Yep.
We're good.
Call it.
Right, I'm going to compile my notes. I'm going to have a think. And I believe Ozzy's got a quiz.
Got part of a quiz, yeah. I mean, I was too busy trying to think of a comeback to the Eat, Shoots and Leaves, but the only other thing I can think of is that pandas are one of the best, you know, the best animals out there, and that does exactly the same. So
one of the best animals out there. That's...
Yeah. Yeah. You should have concentrated on finishing that quiz, to be honest.
But that's, you know, that's what he's sort of essentially comparing the film to. So Bear that in mind when you summon up your notes.
Yeah.
Anyway.
A lazy, affable animal.
Affable and greedy. Yeah. John Wick, right? He is an incredibly well-suited assassin. And quite often, assassins in films are. And the guy who did the tailoring for him was actually in the second one. His name's Luca Mosca. And surprisingly, he also did the tailoring for one of the podcast favorites, Dwayne The Rock Johnson, in Skyscraper.
Oh. Yeah.
The Rock was also an assassin in a film. Can anybody tell me which film this was? 2010.
Oh, 2010.
Oh, is it the Melissa McCarthy film?
I'll accept
Central Intelligence.
I'll accept a different one if you want. It is a car film, yeah.
Yeah, that was Smart. Is it Snitch or Faster?
It is Faster.
There we go.
Yeah, and you can have a bonus point if you can tell me what imaginative name he was given.
Oh, something like
given. Considering that the reason he was put, it's about, for anyone who doesn't know, it's a film about a man who another revenge film, but he was put in prison for being a getaway driver.
The driver.
So. Yeah.
Yes, that is his name. Right? Yeah.
At least it's better than like Adam Fassman.
And yeah, in spite of its name, Faster is not quite as high octane as one might expect. But if you wanted that, he was also in Fast and Furious a million times. Leading that back to Keanu Reeves, he was also in a relatively high octane action thriller back in 1994. Does anyone know what that was?
Odd Rain.
Speed.
Was Speed. And in Speed, he had to keep a bus above a certain speed. Can anybody tell me what that speed was?
50 miles an hour.
50.
Is 50 miles an hour correct? Speaking of 50 miles an hour, that is also the national speed limit if you are in a light commercial goods vehicle in the UK.
or towing a trailer. I think along the national.
Yeah, well done.
You've indeed. Indeed.
Somebody's been practicing.
Yeah. Did my theory recently.
Very good. Hopefully you'll make it through with flying colours for the main one.
Thanks.
And Keanu and Dwayne also appeared together in a 2022 animated film.
DC Super League of Pets.
Yes, yeah, Super Pets. Well done. Correct. We're moving on fairly now. Okay, oh shit, I've made a link to something, but I can't remember. Oh yeah, another very well-suited assassin is... I've got lots of arrows around a page where I've tried to look back to a different thought process. Is that another well-suited assassin would be James Bond, who has his suits made by, more recently, by Tom Ford, who's just had a very good show at London Fashion Week. But our favourite James Bond would have to be Sean Connery, who had his suits made by Anthony Sinclair. One of the best James Bond films is Quantum of Solace. Keanu Reeves.
Oh, wow. You now sullied what you said about Sean.
Alex, he set you up and then he tore you right down.
I know.
This is proper stream of consciousness stuff, and I'm living for it.
Keanu Reeves was the narrator of a film called Quantum. Can anybody tell me what happens in that? And it's very odd.
Is it something to do with space?
It's loosely based on space, yes.
Like black
do you want
hole.
Me to give you a little bit of a hint? Paul Rudd, isn't it?
Oh, it's an interview between Paul Rudd and Stephen Hawking.
Yeah, it's Keanu Reeves narrating Paul Rudd playing chess against Stephen Hawking.
What actual what Paul Rudd to. As Paul Rudd?
No, Keanu Reeves... He's just the narrator. Paul Rudd is Paul Rudd playing
and
chess.
And he plays chess. And they needed Keanu Reeves to narrate that.
Apparently so, yeah.
Well, so no, Keanu Reeves is going like, and he's put his king to d5 or something like that. Or
I didn't. I've not actually watched that. I just saw the trailer and thought that looks...
Who wins?
Paul Rudd.
Who wins?
Paul Rudd.
He gets a gun out.
And then finally, according to a November article in Far Out magazine, which 1990s film was Keanu Reeves' favorite Films on Trial review of a 1990s assassin film.
What? Was it
basically
like,
which was his favorite 1990s Leon. Assassin film? It was Leon, yeah.
Ooh.
And that's about as far as I got, because then I had to come back in to say about how much I enjoyed the Paris scene. So, and then after that, my mind was gone. I couldn't get back on track. Yeah.
Well done on the multitasker, man. But not well done in that you had 2 weeks to prepare the quiz. And you fucking pulled it together in like 2 minutes during this episode. But, you know, nice effort.
Fans 4 pages worth of arrows, though.
Yeah. That is like memento on that notebook right now. Okay, well, thank you very much for that, Austin.
Good luck.
It's given me some time. Sorry,
mate. It's literally going to start with Dave saying, and now it's time for a quiz, and then it's going to cut back to Dave with, thank you very much. Now to the verdict.
But on which note, that has given me some time to have a look over my notes. I think I know where I land on this one. There were some good points going on here. I like what the defense was saying about, you know, the inventiveness of the film. There seems to be a little bit of that. I mean, Gav countered you quite well, but it sounds like, you know, the car kung fu, although we've seen something like that before, it does sound like they've taken it to that perfect kind of level. I didn't mind what Gav was saying about Keanu Reeves not being a great actor. Now, we know he's not particularly great, but he's a good movie star, and you know, that gets you a long way. You know, being a great movie star, there's a lot of people who don't necessarily have range, who are still very watchable, who can still make a film enticing. And I think with this kind of cast, what was said about the characters also kind of falls by the wayside a little, because, okay, the characters may not be particularly well fleshed out, I believe Gav when he says that, but look at some of the names being bandied around here. Clancy Brown, Hiroyuki Sanada, Donnie Yen, Ian McShane, Lawrence Fishburne, Lance Reddick. You know, if I was casting a film, it would look a little bit like this, to be honest with you. I think with actors of that level, even if their characters aren't fully fleshed out, they can get it off the page.
McShane, Dave? Sorry, do you think that'd be... Is that something you can do?
I could appeal to McShane. I could appeal to McShane. Donnie Yen's a hard one. McShane's probably the easiest
there,
to be honest with you.
Man, if you get Donnie... But if you Donnie's get Donnie, a hard you get you know, Ian, the man, do you know is... what I mean? That's the problem.
I to be honest, that's the thing. If I go for Donnie Yen first, if you cast Donnie Yen, people, you know, it's kind of like build it and they will come, isn't it? You cast Donnie Yen, people will be queuing up.
You just
got
to get Donnie, man, and then your film's made. That's
you
it.
You can turn people down.
Yeah, and then I'll just like open
you
the office
tell
one day.
I don't want you in the film.
There you go.
You don't even need to like write the film or come up with the actual premise for the film or anything like that, Dave. Just get
Donnie
in it, and you're fucking good to go.
Or even, you know, if he doesn't want to leave Hong Kong, just tell people you're in it.
Yeah.
And then I'll open the office one day and find Lawrence Fishburne and Ian McShane sleeping rough, seeing if they can be in the film. And it's like, of course
Let's
you can,
go.
Guys. Come on in. I'll make
Where's
you
Donnie?
Donnie?
Where's
Donnie?
Let's
go. He's
coming late.
He's just our back.
What's that, Donnie? Oh yeah, the hair.
He's
run out of the meeting.
Oh.
Oh, well, maybe next time. But yeah, with actors such as these, right? You know, even this piece of crap film that I'm thinking about making now would be all right. You know, these characters get stuff off the page. And to say about the action, you know, it does feel like a long film, 2¾ hours, I grant you. But it seems there's enough going on. I mean, the general consensus seems to be it doesn't feel its length. It feels okay. You know, you're not losing interest at that time. I don't mind the fact that Bill Skarsgård's necessarily a weak link. Again, you know, he's a good actor. Even if his character's not so good, he's a solid actor. The film sounds well shot. Alex's enthusiasm on this, by the way, on the action sequences and on the... on the way it was shot was contagious, to be honest with you. I've not seen Alex this enthusiastic about a film in quite some time, and that told me a little something there about the film. I did worry when Gav talked about the other week's story and the fact that it's gone down a bit of a Star Wars route. Are they trying to make this in the more than it could be, you know, with the franchise on the horizon? Was this just basically a filler film? But I did like one of the killer points that I heard was one that Ozzy made, where he said they actually toyed with the idea of making John Wick 4 and 5 back to back. And instead of doing that, instead of getting two box office releases and getting people to pay for two cinema tickets, they actually condensed what could have been two all right films into one better film. You know, they've not followed the money there. They've not gone for greed. They've stuck with what they feel is right for the medium that they're trying to make and for this film that they're trying to make. And I like that, because I did worry, you know, when they stretched The Hobbit out into a long trilogy, when they made the final Harry Potter film two films instead of one, you know, the final book. I do feel that there's this thing in Hollywood about eking something out when you know it's coming to a close and trying to really squeeze box office money out of people, which they didn't do with this. So I have a little bit more faith, therefore, that this film is actually what they wanted it to be, that they wanted it to be what the fans wanted to see, which is solid action and great cinematography and great locations. And yeah, and you know, the dark humor and the soundtrack are just cherries on top. All in all, and especially the point on pandas, I'm going to mention that. But all in all, I think this has to go on the hit list from what I've gathered today.
Thank you very much for that. Very well put summary there, Dave. Genuine opinions then. I'm going to go first. I really struggled with regards to forming an argument for this because I liked it so much. I do think that there were parts, small parts of my argument that rang true. Some of the fighting was a little repetitive at times, but as Alex said, on the whole, all of the action set pieces and the inventiveness and the creativity and how they were filmed and in, who's in them, you know, bringing like Donnie Yen in and others, like new cast members, all cast members into like this great film. It just made it a lot more engaging. And I really liked it. And I took Siobhan to see it as well. And even though it was 3 hours, she enjoyed it as well. And she hates action films. So that says a lot, really. So, Alex, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I really like it. I didn't make anything up. It is very long. So I did, you know, there were moments I went to see it in the cinema where I was like, wow, man, this is taking some time. But then again, you know, this isn't an action film that's been made for me. So I think if you are a big fan of the genre of action, this, you know, you got like Scott Adkins, which I didn't know, but he plays Killer in it, and he's a really big action star himself. And, you know, so there's a lot of stuff that I think passed me by. I think if you're into action films, John Wick 4 is the holy grail of action films. I just think it's going to be very difficult. Already, so many of the scenes are seen as iconic action scenes. There's not just one or two, like in many films. And you know, I think this John Wick 4 within the genre and also outside is going to go down as a big, big action film.
So higher or lower than our previous film on trial, which was Saltburn, which scored 71% and 79% critical and audience scores.
I think it sounds less divisive.
I think this is going to be top draw for both.
Okay, right. Okay, I'll change it. But higher or lower than the film that we did before Saltburn, which was Oppenheimer, which was 93% critical and 91% audience.
Lower critical and the same audience, I think.
I'm gonna say possibly higher. Like, I know that's, yeah, I'm gonna say like almost of a type. Yeah, I'd say within a percentage or two of that. I don't think it's lower than 90.
Wow. Well, I'll tell you now, higher on both.
Wow.
So 94% critical and 93% audience, which just goes to show how hard a fucking job that I had. Once again, drawing the short straw. Yeah.
When I was watching, I was like, yeah, I'm just gonna have to sit on the defense. I would have had to have spent 2 weeks of just doing prosecution, and I didn't even do 2 minutes of quiz, you know. So,
thank you very much, Ozzie. Thanks, guys, for all your arguments today, for judging. Thank you very much, everybody who has listened to this episode. We really honestly do appreciate every single one of you. Take the time out to listen to our silly little show. If you want more Films on Trial content, check out filmsontrial.co.uk. Check us out on all the platforms where you get your podcasts and all of the social medias as well, at Film Trials on Twitter and Films on Trial on everything else. So we are going to return in 2 weeks' time as we continue our best of 2023 season with the horror. It's not really a remake, is it? Is it like a requel or a sequel? Anyway, it's Evil Dead Rise. So looking forward to that one.
And in the meantime, what have we learned? Well, we've learned that the best James Bond was Sean Connery, and the best James Bond film was Quantum of Solace. And also, and also that if you had to personify John Wick as any animal, it would be a panda. And obviously, John Wick 4 is a hit, and we're going to be back deep in those ears in 2 weeks' time with Evil Dead Rise. Goodbye.
Just say a little sentence with some S's and P's in, if you don't mind.
Silly sods put peppers sang.
Jesus Christ.
Molding young minds over there.
Been a long day.
Yeah. I can tell improvisation is one of your strong suits there.